Okay, so away we go, huh? I think roll call has been completed.
Pretty much.
Approval of the minutes. Anybody have any comments on the meeting minutes from November, whatever, maybe?
Third.
November 1st, 11 November 1st.
That was wrong. The date on that was November 3rd, so I will be changing right, that
we,
date.
We got one comment. You put that in there just to see if any of us are paying attention.
Yeah, that was it.
Any comments on the meeting minutes? Anybody want to make a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Seconded.
Second. All in favor say Yahoo.
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 Aye.
Any negatories? So we got five Yahoos. I think we've approved.
I was trying to raise my hand.
Perfect, Simone. Perfect. All right. We're on to chapter 4, construction and demolition. Jessica from a block away. You're on.
There we go. Everything moves around when I share my screen, so I gotta rearrange now. All right. So I think it was the September meeting that I presented our construction demolition chapter, but we ran out of time to really be able to talk about it. So I'm just going to give kind of a summary of what we talked about and hopefully shouldn't take too much of your time. So we have this material stream of construction, demolition, and wood waste, kind of, we call it C&D, construction and demolition, and it makes up about 24% of landfill waste in the state. There are many factors that led to this. There are limited markets. There aren't that many C&D recyclers, and the market's never been very reliable. They have compliance issues a lot. These recyclers kind of get in trouble for stockpiling waste or hauling garbage without a D certificate and landfilling stuff that they accept as recycling. And recycling isn't a priority for everyone. Construction companies have a lot of work to do, and it's easier to put everything into one dumpster. The companies that do recycle are the ones that are building for LEED certification or other green standards. There are barriers to self-haul if you're just a resident doing a DIY project. You know, it's difficult to haul stuff, could be heavy, you need a truck. It's challenging to figure out where to take everything because there's a different spot for every different material that you can think of. And then there's toxics involved in demolition projects. You could have asbestos, PCBs, treated wood, and those often go to inert waste landfills. So there are barriers to recycling C&D and wood waste, so it's all getting landfilled. I think this 24% was 1.3 million tons of waste, 2020-2021. So it's a lot of material that we're sending to landfill, which isn't preferable, obviously. So we want to increase the recycling of this waste stream. So our team had two ideas that I've outlined here pretty basically. First idea is there's this policy that King County did a few years ago to bring in more private industry to recycle C&D waste. And this policy would be a ban on the disposal of specific C&D materials in the county. It would ban it from the landfill, I mean. This would provide an incentive for larger C&D recyclers to come in and take this material, and we would flow that material to their facilities and away from the transfer stations where they currently go. There are some pros and cons that I went into detail last time, but quickly there's you know, this would increase recycling rates for C&D material. It would reduce traffic at the transfer stations and kind of make just recycling this material more accessible, because you could go to, in theory, you could go to one location instead of five to get your materials recycled. Cons for this, kind of around the C&D recyclers themselves, they, like I said on the last slide, they have compliance issues. Speaking to King County staff, they have problems with their recyclers being truthful on reporting their recycling data. And they take waste that they shouldn't. They end up landfilling a lot of material that that they accept as recycling, and their recycling practices aren't always great, where they'll consider burning debris as a recycling, but that's pretty low on the waste hierarchy. The other idea we had here is to do more research and development. So this would be more of an internal solution, built within our own contracts and infrastructure. And this would take a lot more time than the policy change. And frankly, we have had some failures in the past trying to develop internal solutions for C&D waste. But as we look towards, you know, 5, 10 plus years, we're growing as a county. We're going to be building new infrastructure. I think there's more potential to build success into that future planning. And then we could include this into the next solid waste management plan update. And this current plan already has a lot of work. I think we were chatting. I heard some chat about that before the meeting officially started, and it's a lot of work. So we're not slacking if we go with this research, research idea. And both options are pretty valid. I haven't talked to all of SWEO, our program, but you know, some of us lean towards the research and development, a few lead towards the policy, and I'm personally a supporter of the research, but we can always revisit the policy idea, and we can open this to discussion. This is my last slide, except for my conclusion page, but King County staff had shared that they planned their policy change for many years before they went through with it. So that's a very quick summary of what we talked about last time. I know it was a couple of meetings ago, but I wanted to get maybe your feedback now that we aren't so crunched for time at the last meeting, and we can open discussion. And I'd like you to tell me which option you like best, and then I can bring that feedback back to SWEO and finalize this chapter in this plan.
I have a question for you. It looked from the previous slide, it looked like you were talking mostly about building demolition and private building demolition. What about public projects, both from a building perspective and maybe a roadway perspective, right? If you're pulling up asphalt, are there requirements or are there policies in place for the public side already?
No, not that I know of. There are definitely requirements for hazardous waste that you might pull up, or if you're putting down new road, there's different tars you might have left over that would be hazardous waste. But there really aren't any restrictions to landfilling this material unless it's hazardous, which would require special special handling, like asbestos or lead.
Yeah, I mean, I know that public agencies, where they choose to, will, if they're pulling up some concrete, they'll crush it and reuse it as road base. I was just wondering whether that's a mandatory thing or a...
I think it's a voluntary thing, but I honestly don't know if that's a requirement. But even with that, the amount of material going to the landfill is pretty high.
And going back to the buildings, I mean, places like H&H, don't they take a lot of that stuff?
They do, but you have to have everything very kind of clean, separated. They take a few different materials, but not everything. So it can be kind of challenging for people if you have a bunch of different materials. H&H probably won't take all of them. And it means multiple trips a lot of time for residents, but it's a bit of a difficult haul. I think Pete had shared some difficulties when he was trying to recycle all of his different construction debris, and it's a lot of work to be able to do it, even if you find a location that takes everything.
Jessica, excuse me, this is Mike. Kind of a follow-up question on the one just asked. As I understand it, asphalt has the potential of being recycled at the time of replacement, as opposed to concrete, which does not. And that actually goes back to what your two points were. One was that King County seemed to have an integrity problem with the C&D recapture companies that they encouraged to come into King County. And yet you said, if I understood your comments, you were leaning more towards research solutions, if I understand your statement correctly. So that being said, do you need any assistance, or what can we do to broaden our awareness of the research application alternatives?
Yeah, good question. I am leaning towards research and development, but I'm the neutral public service employee I try to be. And if we go with that option, I think a lot of it will be kind of internal discussions with between SWEO, Waste Connections, probably the City of Vancouver, to kind of, you know, brainstorm what we can do internally. And I don't know what that would look like. I imagine it would take a long time. It'd be a large project to take on, because you don't want to, I don't know, there's always little things that you can miss. And
would result in a policy at the next solid waste master plan update?
It could easily come to that conclusion, to that policy would be the best arrangement. So I try to think of a metaphor, and it is kind of bad, but I kind of think of the policy solution as the shotgun wedding, where high risk, high reward, it could work out, whatever, it could go wrong. And then research side is more, you know, be engaged for 10 years before you get married, a lot slower, maybe more thought out, but you might reach the same goal of getting married at the end of it. So, it's kind of a matter of we've kind of ignored this material stream for a long time, because if you read the last few solid waste management plans, there's kind of status quo. And so we wanted to bring forward, you know, maybe a radical change to as an option to throw into the system, instead of just saying status quo again. So this was as much as we could do in the short time that we had. So could you, you know, just throw a wrench and see if the policy works? And there's definitely potential there. And King County is recycling, I think from their baseline, they're recycling at least 40% of what used to go in the landfill. So that's a lot of material, even if it's not 100%.
I'd quickly add to what you just said. King County just signed an agreement with Washington State University where they are going to apply their asphalt reuse solution. I'm trying to get the details to it, but they have committed, or have admitted, I guess is a better way of putting it, that they have signed an agreement. And I'm trying to get the details so that we can get that out to the whole club. And that falls into your metaphor, Jessica, of that that 10-year relationship, you know, before you have the commitment. Well, they've got over 14 years of that relationship already signed. So we're kind of discovering the relationship before we have to buy the shotgun. And I think that maybe our timeline for Clark County might benefit from some recent developments in King County.
Yeah, to see where that new relationship goes will be good to know. Yeah.
Well, if you're looking for people to pay a little bit more attention to what's going on with your changes, just enact that policy thing. We'll get some attention. Is there any other counties to talk about? Is Thurston County doing anything? Pierce County, Spokane, anybody else have anything that they're doing differently? I mean, we've been doing it this way for a long time, just really letting things happen voluntarily, whatever happens, right? And you're not proposing any changes to that now. College is not requiring any changes yet to that.
I think the one requirement will be through the organics bill. I think there's a point in there about clean wood waste, recycling that. So that would fall under construction wood waste, I think.
Looks like Ruben's got his hand up.
Hi, Jessica. Yeah, my question kind of dovetails with just the previous one. You know, we can't be the only county that's dealing with this. And then I guess my question is, how much information sharing, you know, can happen or has happened with other counties who have either struggled with, you know, with this issue or have implemented policy or have done research, you know, that has kind of, you know, proven, you know, positive results. And I guess my thinking is that, you know, we may not need to reinvent the wheel, for lack of a better word. There may be other municipalities or counties that have looked into this and have done the research and implemented policies. And it sounds like King County is one of them. But in terms of, you know, either the research and development aspect or the policy implementation that we do, you know, is there any opportunity to kind of learn from the mistakes that others have made to maybe streamline and improve on those processes for trying to reduce the C&D waste that's going into our landfills?
Yeah. King County really is kind of the driving force in the state right now for C&D recycling. And that's why it is kind of a good route to just look at their policy. And they shared that they, you know, they could share their contracts with us to see the language that they use to designate these recycling facilities and all that. So to have access to those kind of foundational steps is good. And I am not sure if there have been other similar programs in the state, which is definitely something that would be good to know. Is there an alternative to what King County has proposed? So.
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, we're talking about this. I keep thinking about public projects and roadway projects because that's my own background. And a lot of times, Clark County is tearing up and rebuilding a roadway. 9 times out of 10, they'll have some federal funding to support that. And I'm wondering whether even the federal funding would require some recycling these days. Whether, you know, if you're going to use federal funds, you need to recycle your materials as much as possible. Do you know whether that's true or not?
I know there are some requirements, like schools being built are subject to green standards. I don't know if it's up to LEED certification, but there are similar programs. So I imagine with any federal projects that they might have a similar requirement, maybe not LEED standards, but
Yeah.
And I see now that Laura's hand is up.
Yeah, I just was going to add that we do have that box library that has a lot of background and information about C&D and lots of other things as well. But I do think, you know, Jessica's on top of it, and that King County has some of the more progressive stuff going on in the state. But certainly there are other models out there of what states are doing or what counties are doing. And I'm happy to provide that link for researching that through our library that we have, where you can, you know, access information from other counties and share information. And so that might be one avenue. I could also just look into it a little more myself. I don't off the top of my head know, but I wanted to just add that piece.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm new to the box system, and it's a good opportunity to see what everyone is doing, which is good.
Julie?
Yeah, can you all hear me very well? I had a question, maybe Jessica or Laura know this, or for the benefit of the group. Part of the reason maybe King County is so unique in our state could be that they operate the landfill. So they have a public interest in assuring that certain resources don't end up in the landfill, because if we have a recoverable or a market for such material, it means that the life of the landfill that they own and manage can be longer. Potential, assuming that they own it. I Googled their website, I'm pretty sure they do, but there could be policy reasons too within a jurisdiction, such as environmental or sustainability procurement policies or others that drive diversion as well. Like Jessica says, having a policy to do why, I'm sorry, that's my baby. Having a policy to require diversion would be supported by other policies too. On both ends, and also targeting who we're trying to affect the most change with, such as like the large industrial projects or large commercial projects that generate lots in a short amount of time, where diversion might need to be incentivized by government or by other methods, or required through a policy that needs to be enforced. So just add that consideration versus a small residential generator in the makeup of the waste stream that Jessica was mentioning at the beginning of the presentation, considering how small residential like self-haul loads are different. And H&H facility is a facility that our public uses a lot right now for our fall leaves program for all the region. But imagine if we sent commercial loads there too. So we need to have capacity within the region to grow. And that's kind of that research that Jessica points to. I hope that was helpful, but grounding why King County is so different than, and why even other cities maybe haven't gotten so far, is we don't own our transfer system yet, and or the disposal site is in another state too. But other policies that were referenced, like a climate action plan, could also require some of these. State building code requirements for green energy might also come with those requirements. It's outside of our wheelhouse, but hope that's helpful.
Yeah, helpful. Thank you, Julie.
Just got to keep jacking up the cost for disposal since the recycling pays off.
Yeah, it could go either way. For heavy material, it's probably more expensive to landfill it because you pay by the ton, but maybe recycling, I think at H&H you just pay a flat fee if you've just got a dumpster full of bricks, like it's $50 or something, but it would be worth, you know, looking into what the costs or benefits might be to diverting that material. And we also don't want to totally destroy relationships with the current recyclers in the region by inviting in these bigger ones that are kind of taking over the state. So there's a lot of different things that we'd research through, you know, dedicating some more time on it.
So what's the motivation on the county side to now spend a lot more time doing this research and development side, so that you're ready when the next SWIP comes up? Because, you know, this SWIP will go in, it'll get approved, you'll be enacting it, and there'll be lots of things to do. And, you know, what's going to call your attention back to this such that in 5 years you're ready to go with something better? And the question is that happen? Or will we be looking at this slide again in 5 years?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think part of it is my persistence in the group, because I've been disappointed in the previous plans and just would really like to have an impact on this one material stream. But you're right, there is a ton of work with the organics plan and hazardous waste, expanding services, just a bunch of different things, this recycling contamination study. So this is kind of ideally, I know it's, you know, within my own work plan, I would probably be the person doing this research, and it would probably be at least 3 years from now. So maybe the tail end of the research would be ready by the next swamp in the best circumstances. But you're right, a lot of things could derail it in the next few years.
And it'll happen when ecology tells you it has to happen.
Yeah.
That's a driver for a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're, you know, as a group, we're just trying to chip away at those bigger material streams. Organics is obviously a huge one, and we now have requirements from the state to reduce that, but we were working towards it before the organics bill passed. So it's, you know, within our own program goals as well to reduce waste going to the landfill and just slowly chipping at project by project.
Do you want us to say which one of these we support?
Yeah, I think ideally if I get, how many people are here? 5 out of 9, 6 out of 9. If I get kind of just a poll of where you're thinking as our community liaisons, and then I can bring it back for probably some internal discussions will come out of it, and then we can, get it in the final chapter. Mike?
Yes, and I apologize for not putting my hand up before and interrupting. I hope I apologize for that. But my question is, what can we do? We have and this isn't meant to be a political statement, but we get a lot of verbiage out of Olympia that says that there is a total green orientation and support. Is there any connection or resource that you have, Jessica, at Olympia that assists you in researching the alternatives of handling these materials?
Yeah, so far, no. There's so much happening there with organics and battery waste and just a bunch of different things that I haven't heard any talks about this construction stream.
Okay. I wonder, I guess I would ask then as a follow-up, Jessica, if we as a team made ourselves accessible to you and you had particular areas that you wanted researched and you sent us off in particular directions to get you that firsthand information, would that help you in your resolving these issues and these projects and getting firm answers?
Yeah, I think there's, potential in that. I guess I don't know enough about what's happening in Olympia with the green standard you just said, but.
There's just a lot of talk on it, and yeah. we're living at the point of implementation of whatever that concept is so esoterically expressed. But if we can assist you in getting down to facts that would affect Clark County and what we can do, I throw my hat in the ring to be used. You know, you make the list and I'll make whatever calls any direction you want. I thought, you know, you're saying 3 years out and I don't know about the rest of you, but I just kind of feel like we're working on a shorter time frame. Especially with the fact that it would be nice to get some guidance that we could incorporate in our current renegotiation, for recycling for the next 10 years.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, if the group is saying this is a bigger priority than construction demolition has been given in the past, then that I think will help guide at least my work plan and our program. Just as we finalize this solid waste management plan between all the different projects, you know, need like a clear perspective on what is a priority and where we can best spend our time. And I think these discussions help with that.
It's like Laura's got her hand up again.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in and say, of course, at Ecology, we're a resource for you too, Jessica. I'm, you know, wear multiple hats, but I'm happy to try and help you access information or resources that you need whenever I can. Yeah, I'm new, of course, to this position. I've been a little over a year, so still learning myself. So I can't always answer all the questions immediately, but I can usually find the right person to go ask. So feel free to utilize me in that way, however you can or however you need to.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Yeah. And we at the state and Ecology are really just taking legislation, as you know, like the organics management law, and then trying to translate that into what it means for you at the county level or the city level. So, you know, we're not really the ones making those decisions. We're just the ones given the implement this, part. And so, just to be clear about that. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that I think more and more now clean wood, that's not, you know, that is recyclable is a part of the current organic management stuff in that it still may be construction debris, but it's recyclable. And so it can go into compost or into other, you know, waste streams. And that's certainly part of the upcoming push to minimize organics going into the landfill and reduce the methane associated with that. So.
Yeah, good. And I should also mention, are we running out of time, Amber?
No, we're good. I just noticed Brian had his hand up.
Oh, okay. Brian.
Thank you. I'll make this brief, but I want to speak to a little bit of what our motivation is to the county to keep this moving. And our motivation is not to be caught behind the eight ball like we were this year. And so to keep this moving, and this is a really important piece to us as the county. And since Laura is here, I will talk that in the next few months, we're going to start rounding out our tasks for the next grant cycle, which is a 2-year process. And this may fit into that. And so to keep ourselves accountable, we could include this as a deliverable, just to keep us on task and keep the process moving. So. That's all for me.
Seems like it seems like what you're saying as a policy side needs to be researched a little bit. It's almost on the other side to really see how that's going to work. Can you get larger C&D recyclers to Clark County? I just have this idea that contractors or developers or whoever, if all of a sudden this became a Clark County ordinance and was proposed as one, that you would hear from them because of the expense, right? Here's another thing driving up the cost of houses in Clark County, you know, and so how do you get through something like that? How are you going to decide between these two proposed options? You want our opinion, but we're not the final word.
Yeah, just wanted your input, and just by the questions coming up, there's definitely research that we need to do on our end, that it's such a complicated waste stream because it's commercial, residential, it's in every project you can imagine just across the county, that there's a lot of moving parts to this material stream. And even if we go a policy direction, it would probably be, I don't know how to estimate time, maybe, you know, at least a year or 2 years before we could probably get it under our, get it planned enough to bring it to council or into the community. So.
Let's see, Raven has his hand raised.
Yeah, and I may have missed this, Jessica. This is all good information. I think it's something that we can work on and try to implement. But just directly, what percent of reduction would be our target if we did implement either policy or through research and development? Or reducing the amount of C&D waste that's going into our landfills. And then the follow-up would be, I think that would be kind of our driver into looking into, do we have the existing capacity to handle that? And if not, how would we get that capacity for recycling that material? I just wanted to see what your goal, best guess, or even just off the cuff, idea would be in terms of how much of that 24% would we aim initially to target?
Yeah, I would probably compare to the success that King County's seen, that 40% is pretty reliable. 40% of the waste that was landfilled, they're consistently getting. And that'd be a lot of material if we did the same. So I don't think it would fit within our current capacity at the facilities that we have, but it would really be a plan for the fourth transfer station. And that's, many years down the road. It's, thinking very long term to be able to reach that quantity within our current system.
And again, how long has King County had their system in place for recycling C&D?
Oh, King County, I think 4 or 5 years. I think they had started planning it in like 2008 and they just, in the last 2015, 2016, maybe. I can double check that.
So in 4 or 5 years of having their policy in place for reducing C&D, they've seen a 40% decrease in what's going into their landfills.
Yes, I think that's a good summary. And that was just a conversation that I had with King County. I don't have the exact numbers, but I could easily ask them for what data they have.
I think it's a good, it's a good benchmark of where, where we could be, and I'm sure there was a gradual build up to that, and it's probably or possibly still increasing as it becomes more implemented. But thank you.
Thanks. Derek, I see your hand raised.
Hi, sorry, I've been trying to be, we're pretty close to the subject matter, so I don't want to say too much on necessarily and sound biased, but I do think capacity wise, there's always opportunities to, do it on smaller quantities and smaller opportunities within what we already have infrastructure wise. The logistics of it is a challenge, but we do have, three transfer stations with, space that's not utilized on the existing tip floor. So if there was a way to utilize some of that space, some of this material could be addressed, sooner than later through the already existing infrastructure and regulated system we have in place. And then it just comes down to markets. You know, Clark County is, you know, vastly different than the Seattle market area for moving different types of materials. And so that becomes a challenge when you're, you know, breaking these into small quantities. You know, where do you find the market for that? How far do you have to drive it to find an end market for it? You know, the cost just becomes a little prohibitive, you know, on the private companies. But I think there are options in the shorter term to make some headway on this, call it a pilot, call it different things that you might want to call it. But I do think there's some opportunities out there to move quicker than, you know, waiting for additional transfer stations.
Yeah, that's definitely good. Good to hear, because when you
just it takes a, you know, it takes us all being on the same page with commitment as far as public health has to understand what the transfer stations are trying to do, what they're trying to reclaim, making sure that we're staying in, within regulations on everything else. You know, because a lot of these private C&D companies that you bring in, I mean, you know, there's numerous lawsuits always in place currently right now and over time as far as, you know, what is regulated material and garbage and everything else. And there's always a battle between the regulated haulers and the C&D companies out there. Because, you know, a lot of the loads that go into those facilities are not really recyclable. You know, there's a lot of garbage that goes in there. And so that does not, that never makes the regulated hauler very happy. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's,
if we can work in partnership, it'll always come out a little bit better.
Yeah.
I think that's a really neat idea. That, you know, if I go back and you think about option one and option two, I'm not sure that those two aren't the same thing. Okay. So, you know, Jessica, you made the point that even if the county decided they were going to enact a policy that forces people to recycle, well, that's going to take a couple years to really figure out and plan out. So in other words, we're doing research on it, right? To figure out how to do that. And then if we pick the research and development side, well, what's the outcome from that? Isn't the outcome going to be a policy that we then implement?
Yeah, so very well, could be.
These two things are really the same. And, you know, the disappointment for me is the fact that it seems like we keep going with the status quo and nothing's going to change. But, man, you know, if SWAC, and I'll be curious to see if my other SWAC members will agree with this, if we can, as a group, say we'd like to see this prioritized so that something really is in place to happen before the next plan update, so that you do your investigation, you do a pilot study like Derek said, you start to investigate how we can really make this work, that would be great, you know, because that's got to happen. And if we get busy with other things, we'll be at the table again in 5 years with the same slide.
Yeah, I think the direction we want to go is definitely, you know, in my, you know, choose one or the other, it's going to be the research and kind of internal development side will, I think, is what I'll put in the chapter, but I'll include the information about the policy, you know, as something that we will keep looking at and see, you know, will this fit into our system and, you know, what are the alternatives, the other counties, all that, and just have it as a more, you know, thorough look into it instead of what I have kind of slapped together in the past 3 months to try to find some solution for this waste, right, instead of leaving it status quo, like you had said. So I think this was a really good discussion, and I've probably taken up more time than I had planned. Sorry, Amber, and we can move on to the next topic, if that's all right.
All good?
Good.
All right. Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jess. That was good.
Yes, that means next up is Doug Drennan.
That was like cue. Sorry.
He didn't bring a gavel.
Exactly. Dan's beating Spain.
All right.
Doug, we are looking at your team's chat.
Oh, you don't see my screen?
Well, yeah. Spain.
They're a giant slayer.
Sorry, I messed up.
I don't know. What does Japan do with recycling? They're beating Spain, obviously.
Wait a second.
Doug, did you send this to Amber already?
I did, but I made a few minor changes here.
Okay,
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Let me get back to, I had this, let me get out of all this other stuff and okay. Where did I leave you guys at? Let's see. All right. Okay. Do you see my screen now?
Not yet.
I thought I hit shared screen.
There we go.
You got it now? Okay. Now you got it?
Yes, thank you.
All right. I'm sorry for the delay there. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. My name is Doug Drennan. I'm a project manager for the regional study, system study, and tonight we're presenting information. A lot of it was prepared as a result of that, but now it's being incorporated into the solid waste plan. Back in October, we presented to the committee an overview of the existing conditions of the solid waste facilities, the three transfer stations, as well as the MRF. So tonight, what we'd like to do is share with you what we summarizes our needs and opportunities for these facilities. And I just want to kind of start by saying something that sort of dovetails into exactly what we were just talking about with the C&D material. As we look at needs and opportunities, certainly as we discuss these slides, you're going to see the results of the needs to improve or make improvements at these facilities on the basis of their older, their capacity needs to be expanded. But the opportunity side of this thing is where I want you to think, because we certainly want to look at these facilities not just in making improvements to the existing conditions, but also designing in the facilities that might be used to process more materials and recycle more material. So that's just kind of a lead in. With that, the first slide, let me just summarize this existing conditions, which we presented a while back in October. You know, the main transfer stations, the West Van and CTR, both opened in the early 90s when the waste stream was 173,000 tons or so, less than 200. And in 2021, we're 160% more and 419,000. We did a conditions assessment. Most of the main facility structures are in very good position or shape, with minor improvements they're fine. Certainly there's maintenance things that need to be done, but in general, these facilities can be adapted and expanded to help meet our future needs. But just to point out, there's been no major improvements over this period from 93 to 2022. So as we look forward, in this solid waste plan, we see that solid waste is going to go from, or the population of Clark County is expected to grow 43%, or over 720,000 citizens by 2040. Waste generated is expected to increase by 30%, so from 400,000 to over 500,000 tons. So like we said, the need is each of these facilities currently receives more traffic and waste than it was intended in its original design. So improvements and expansions are needed at each facility. But as I said, the opportunity to enhance efficiencies and operations is one key thing to consider in expanding these facilities. But the other one is adding new services. And one of the things was discussed is C&D. And so one of the things to think about is, as these facilities are being considered for expansion, the ability to handle maybe processing capabilities for C&D or managing that material more are things to be thought through, as well as the organics material, which is going to become kind of a big issue. The intent right now is to provide new space for future operations, possibly at West Van, if the MRF is relocated. I mean, that's currently being considered, and so we'll talk about that. But if the MRF is relocated, then certainly the space occupied by the equipment is available for possibly new operations. And just to let everybody know, we are doing some master planning and capital improvements as part of the phase two report. That work is supposed to start to culminate by, February. So let's take a little look at what's the growth here. This is the population projections I was pointing at. In the 2020 census data, we updated all of our previous projections, and the state had forecasted, or the state had documented that Clark County was probably one of the fastest growing counties in the state. So there's been an 18% growth projection for the county to 720,000. As I said, the waste stream is expected to grow. We did not do projections for each city in terms of waste, just simply assumed that the waste growth would be, or the amount of material would grow about 30% each of these jurisdictions. Now, why that's important is we have three facilities located in the county, and the question is, where will this waste go? We don't know, but this map kind of illustrates where the service areas are for each of the three stations. And I just want to point out that if you look at these crosshatch areas as produced by the county, that's where the urban growth boundary and density is expected to occur. So you have growth on the cities, each of this outlined cities like Battleground and Camas and Washougal, but there's a lot of growth in the central corridor off 205 and off of I-5. And in that area, that's where it's at least slated. So it would appear that a lot of the material would drift towards the CTR facility. So we had to make some assumptions. So we took each of these service areas and made some assumption that what happens if 50% of the urban growth boundary is distributed to CTR. And that produces a certain volume of waste. And then we made assumption, well, maybe 70% of that growth would occur. And that produced some numbers. And what we did to kind of come up with some estimates of what the needs are for each of these facilities took the worst case, you know, assuming the worst case for CTR, for Washougal, and for West Van. So that just gives you, I mean, this is getting into a little detail, but I want you to be aware of that because as we look at these facilities. So I want to walk through each of the facilities and do a real quick summary of what we summarize the needs are. We went over this at our last meeting. This is the West Van facility. One of the things to be aware of is there's been a lot of changes and out here. This tank here is a water tank. It's fed off a well. Now there's a new water line that the city has distributed. So this is obsolete. Some of these outlying buildings are obsolete in the sense that they're to upgrade them is going to spend a lot of money. It might be better to relocate those facilities and open up this space. So I'm just giving you a quick overview that there's going to be a lot of opportunity to make better use of this space when we start to consider in the master plan how we might handle materials, better handle wood and yard waste, maybe C&D materials that are, some of them are stored back here. So that will all be looked at. The overview of the facility, there's 21 acres here. About 30% of the material that's generating the county goes to this facility at this time. We don't see that number jumping up significantly. So right now, it averages between 425 tons a day. We do offer recycling and HHW drop-off centers here. And, of course, the MRF is there at processing all the co-mingles, which is 250 tons. And this is shows you what's happened after the COVID. You can see there's been, just in summary, historically, the volume of traffic in the Gold Line has increased quite a bit. So the summary of existing conditions, there's some internal damages to the columns, but overall the structure is good. As I mentioned, we need more space at this facility to handle organics. Right now, the city brings their mixed food waste and yard waste that's dumped on the floor inside the building. There, it's not very convenient to load that. And as that material is going to, there's going to be more food waste that's going to be collected. So one of the things we'll have to do is look at how we can handle that material, that growing material, better, and also look at ways that can be maybe managed and marketed. And then we were talking to Ron Zimmerman about that earlier, about the agriculture needs for good material. So who knows, this could maybe feed into a composting operation in the county. The city or CRC has just put in a new scale that's going to help the traffic flow. But by and large, the new master plan will identify improvements to handle the circulation, and there will be significant capital needed over the years to improve this site. So the immediate needs, we're seeing that the waste volume is expected to grow from 116 to 148,000 tons, so to almost 600 tons a day. We need to reduce the congestion at the site. Right now, all of the traffic comes through the scales, and is there's a lot of cross traffic in that intersection. It's safe, but it's complex, and it's there's a lot of congestion. We need to increase the operational space to manage the growth. We need to add more stalls for the public to unload. And of course, I mentioned already, provide space to manage, accept and manage the mixed organics. The county has brought up the need to put in a second compactor at the facility for redundancy. Right now, if that compactor goes down, there's only one other compactor in the region. And of course, all the material here is compacted and loaded for efficiency to to barge to the landfill. So that's a key element of the facility, particularly with the idea that we got growth in the county. Having redundancy and backup is going to be important. The ability to top load materials is also a need. And then, like I said, upgrade and replace the almost obsolete staff facilities. Opportunities, as we look at how we might reconfigure this site or make improvements, one thing would be to improve the recycling HHW drop-offs so it's a little more customer-friendly and more accessible and convenient for access. We believe that some of the demo in some of the outdated facilities and possibly modify the circulation, which would then open up the site to minimize congestion, but also a more efficient operation. If the MRF is moved, there's about 45,000 square feet of the existing building that would be vacated. And that's where we look at the opportunity to expand transfer operations, maybe provide facilities for processing construction demolition, and also certainly provide facilities for managing the mixed organics, the debris and yard debris. So these are things that will be looked at. And so when you look at these other waste streams and you think about this in the development of the solid waste plans, identifying the needs of these kinds of services or the potential of these services is quite important to ensure that we incorporate space or potential for adding space for managing these materials. So I mentioned the MRF moving, and what does that do? Well, moving the MRF out, the MRF equipment is mostly obsolete. They do a good job of operating it, but it is very dated technology, and by getting a newer and advanced equipment in there, the operations will be more cost effective. It will lower labor costs, improve market quality of the materials recovered, and certainly increase the capacity. Right now, the current facility can only process at 15 tons an hour or so, and these a more advanced technology could process the material in 30 to 40 tons per hour. So there's a great advancement in technology that will enhance the recycling. It will open up 45,000 square feet of space, like I said. And if the site is more centrally located, it may be more efficient for the collection of materials for trucks that are collecting in the north part of the county, won't have to travel all the way to the West Vance facility to drop off their materials. So these are the opportunities if the MRF is relocated more centrally. Now, if the MRF is not relocated, what I mentioned before is some of these outbuildings could be removed and this space be reallocated. The water tank could be obsolete because the water supply system is available, which now opens up this back area for possibly expanding the MRF. So that gives you kind of an overview of the opportunities here. This is a great facility. It has the potential. It's on the largest parcel of all the facilities, so it has the largest potential to add new services that can enhance the overall solid waste system. Now let's move on to Washougal. Again, this is the existing facilities. It was built in 2009 or started operation in 2009. It's only on about 4.5 acres. It's a small transfer station. It serves the eastern part of the county. Only handles about 135 tons today. It used to be that this material was transloaded and sent over to West Van, but now that the Wasco County landfill is now operated by Waste Connections, this material can be direct hauled to that facility. Right now, it's only open to the public 3 days a week, And in those conditions, the facilities is very congested. Let's just say there's not enough space inside the building to unload. And you can see here by this, the number of trips that have increased over the years, just in the last 5 and 6 years. So the needs and opportunities for this facility are the transfer station does need to be expanded. It's busting at the seams. It needs increased space for both the commercial and the public to unload. With the improvements, there could be some enhancement in the site circulation and enhanced safe operations to maybe keep traffic from the public and commercial haulers separate, and also make sure that we can minimize the potential for offside queue. The largest volume facility is the CTR, Central Transfer System. This is the site map, the main transfer station here with the compactor, the scales here, and of course, Highway 503 is right there, and it's a very, you know, busy highway. Recycling center is here. The property in the back is owned by is a separate site. It's owned by Waste Connections, so it's being used, but it's not part of the official property here. Over the years now, there's been development here with apartments and in the back, new housing. So there's been a lot of changes out there with regard to the adjacent properties. It is the largest. It's only on about 5 acres. It's open 7 days a week, but it is the busiest facility. It receives about anywhere from 800 to over 1,000 cars or tons of waste per day. 66% of the waste from the county goes to this facility. And if you go back to that map that I showed, with all the projection of where the urban growth boundary is, the greatest amount of growth is going to occur in this vicinity. So waste is compacted here and then taken and transported to the Port of Vancouver for shipping. Again, we see the traffic pick up after the COVID years, and it remains fairly constant here at this facility. When we did an assessment of this, there's been no improvements at this facility since it was no major improvements. The building is in good condition. There's areas of the floor that need to be repaired, but by and large, with normal maintenance and some improvements, the facility is fine. CRC just completed the improvements at the entrance, which improves the ingress egress. Basically, what it does is allows the left turn into the facility to have their own dedicated lane. Thus, reduces some of the off-site stacking that used to occur on the highway. Also, in exiting the site, customers can no longer take a left on 503. They are required to go to take a right turn out. So that's improved the safety of the facility. It does not eliminate all the queuing issues because, again, there's so much traffic there that additional improvements will be needed to eliminate the potential queuing onto 503 on high peak days. And by and large, the facility needs to be expanded. There's just not enough stalls, jump stalls, and an operating area to accommodate all the material. The CRC does a good job of cleaning the floor and trying to make space, but that involves delays in getting into the facility, which then causes backup. So the facility really needs to be expanded to be able to handle more material, as well as to free up more space to manage other materials like C&D. They do some of that now on the floor, but It'd be nice if the floor was bigger so that the space was available for those kinds of services. The existing conditions I mentioned, the assessment was done. The scale capacity doesn't provide enough capacity to get the traffic in into the facility. Congestion is here at the outbound where transfer trucks and garbage trucks are coming around the corner and people are leaving this site and they're trying to get on the scale. So there's a lot of congestion. And as already mentioned, the tip floor space and the limited space there. So the size of the building needs to be expanded.
Hey, Doug.
Yeah.
Go back on the slide. What's the big parking lot?
Oh, that's another property. I think that's been, this is an older light. I think that's been converted now to storage. Storage, yeah, storage units. So this is an older thing, older. You can see the apartments here haven't been completed. So this is an older picture, but this is all storage buildings. It's been built in the last 2 years. So this is, again, the current tip floor and how busy it is. Right now we're handling 870 tons. Future capacity, it could be as high as 1,400 tons. So that's driving the need to make sure we have more tip floor space and expand. In terms of expanding the facility, again, this is the site that's currently encumbered in the CRC facility. The property in the back here is a separate property and would have to be rezoned or approved for any kind of expansion. But we have looked at it, and it's possible to expand if that facility could be encumbered or that property could be. So needs and opportunities, again, the waste stream here, it could grow to as much as 350,000 tons a year. The immediate needs are to look at ways to expand scale capacity, either by extending perimeter roads to provide more queue lane capacity and improve circulation. Those kinds of improvements could be made on a short term, but on long term, the facility needs to be expanded at the current site, or possibly build a new transfer station that can either replace this facility or augment it by handling, let's say, the public. So these are the options that are being considered. But nonetheless, this is probably one of the more difficult situations. The other two transfer stations, there are ways to enhance those facilities, expand them, but the CTR is a little more complicated, and more evaluation is going to have to be done for making sure that the long-term options are there for managing waste. So that's my last slide. I'll take any questions.
If I may.
Hand up before Derek. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, a quick question. If the fourth facility is built and based on the first initial slides you were showing, especially with the percent growth in Battleground and in Ridgefield, if a fourth facility was put in place and was located, let's say, in that general vicinity of, Western Battleground, Eastern Ridgefield, is there a percent of the pressure on the current CTR that is projected to move to that site?
Well, the location, I mean, that's a good question. I don't have a magic answer to it. Certainly, if a smaller facility would be placed, say, at the north part of the county, that there is a number of the public that drive down to that facility. I'd say we'd have to do some work on the, like, where are people coming from to better dial that in. Certainly it would relieve some of the traffic that comes to this facility.
Am I correct in understanding that relocating the new MRF is anticipated to be part of that fourth location?
That could occur. It's not been determined that that's the case, but it would be possible to suggest that if you're going to build a MRF, that certain materials could go to that facility. Certain customers could.
Thank you.
Those are good suggestions. Certainly, it's not unusual to co-locate a MRF and a transfer station. The biggest issue at this facility is the amount of the public that comes here. It's significant. On a weekend, they can get 1,000 cars. At that time, you don't have the big garbage trucks coming in, so we don't have as much volume of garbage, but you got a lot of customers coming in, and the facility isn't designed to handle that much traffic.
So has there been any study to figure out where most of those cars are coming from, what cities, what directions, that kind of stuff, so you know where to position a new facility to relieve that one?
No, that work has to still be done. But there has been no, and to do so, we would have to, Derek might be able to weigh in on this, to obtain, you know, zip codes from people coming in, something of that nature to determine. But Derek or Mike, do you know of any studies that were done previously to determine that?
We've done some unscientific zip code studies, and, they're coming from everywhere. A lot of them are coming out of that Brush Prairie battleground zip code. But once again, zip codes are not very scientific.
The mere fact is, here's from my professional just observation. I live out here, by the way. I've gone to CTR occasionally. I don't go there often, but. The mere fact is, if you're in North Vancouver or the east part of Vancouver, it's very easy to get to CTR as opposed to driving out to West Van, you know, going clear out to the port area. Both. On West Van is not open on Sundays, and Washougal is not open on the weekends. So therefore, people have a choice. They'll go to CTR. It's open 7 days. So these are things the county is looking at, changing the operating hours and days to possibly helping that distribution. But again, there's no scientific study that can prove that. These people will go to the most convenient place.
I see Derek's hand is raised again.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't get a chance to say it before. I know we're talking more capital and infrastructure investments and everything else, but I do want to remind the group that previously it's been presented to SWAC that really one of the things that can be done right away to increase the safety and overall use of the facilities is to raise the minimum tip fee. And if we're talking about needs and opportunities, I think that is a huge opportunity that is not being addressed right now that could alleviate a lot of the problem. It's an inefficient use of the solid waste system to have everybody coming in to pay $10 to drop off their 30 pounds of garbage. They really should be using curbside service. And our fee structure right now is not supporting that system.
Uh,
Yeah, just to tag on to that, we did some work on that. There is no, I agree with Derek. I'm just saying that we looked to see if there was some scientific information that could say, if you raise it to a certain level, this has an impact. We couldn't find any, no studies to demonstrate that. But Derek is correct. If the minimum fee was set at, you know, a minimum amount of waste coming in, say 300-400 tons, Mike can speak to this. We did these studies. And then the minimum fee is $25. Somebody might look and say, hey, for $25, I get weekly garbage service. Why am I doing this? So there, you know, that gets to Derek's point. And would it have an impact? It certainly would, you would assume. It would either have the impact of some people would change to go to collection, or less traffic would come because they ain't going to come in there with just one can and pay $10. They're at least going to wait and make fewer trips with larger volumes. So,
yeah, and it's a non-capital investment that, rather than waiting 5 years for a new transfer station, you know, could help significantly sooner.
We've had these discussions before. You know, what's the steps now moving forward? Because I think you're right. I mean, that's something like that could be enacted tomorrow. I mean, not really, but you know, you could do some of that stuff.
Well, the process is generally we need to update the county council and get that approval. So that's something that's on management's list to discuss with them. We've just, as you know, have had a lot of changes over the last year since we made that presentation to you back in February, March of this year. So unfortunately, that has not come forward, but we expect that as part of an overall package that we're going to present sometime after the first of the year when the new counselors are fully oriented.
I just want to give the committee this perspective. The fact these facilities haven't been updated or expanded is not unusual. I mean, King County over the last 10 years has gone through a process of expanding and upgrading their entire transfer station system. They had five stations that they had to do that to. So, and they didn't do them all at once. The bottom line is these facilities do get tired. They shifts in the volumes, but also changes in regulation impact the operations, and things like what's going to happen now with the state passing a law to reduce the amount of organics. These things impact not only the collection services and that, but also the facility needs to make sure the facilities have the capability to address these different waste streams. So it's not unusual to be in this position. A lot of places are like this, and you just get to the time where it's time to, you have to do something. And these things they're not going to fall apart tomorrow. So it's a case where we can take our time and do it right. And in some cases, some phase development plans can be developed that will make improvements on the immediate needs and give time to make good decisions on long term.
Hey, Doug, I don't mean to cut you off here or anything, but there was a request to maybe stop sharing your screen. I don't want to kick you out if you're still working on that, but if you're done, you might be able to. Thank you. So we can see each other a little bit better here.
Sorry.
You're good. Thank you.
Any more questions? Anything else on this discussion?
Well, like I say, as you look at these other chapters of the plan and look at those, think about the facility needs, just making sure that as committee and looking forward, Any thoughts you have on those needs, bring them forth.
So as we're talking about other elements, be sure we're paying attention to how that affects the operation of those facilities.
Yeah, I mean, like looking at waste streams like HHW, moderate risk waste, expanding recycling services, organics, I think those subjects are going to come up. And certainly we're prepared to hear what you say and make sure that we're accommodating that in our long-term plans for facilities.
Is there current work going on in terms of evaluating these capital needs as we've been talking about over the past number of months, or is that kind of done until you get further along?
As part of phase one report, the first thing we did is this condition assessment. That was the regional study was completed in last year. So that report is produced, and that revealed the existing conditions. After that, we went through and developed some concept plans for each of these facilities, and that came to help us develop some preliminary costs. But those are very preliminary, and the work that we're going to do in the next few upcoming months is to flesh out those master plans, site development plans, and add a little more detail. So we'll be considering these things that we've talked about in the space requirements, but that's to be developed in the next 3 months.
Thank you. Anybody else? If not, we're going to let the public talk. They've been waiting a long time. Oh, they must have all left. Public comment period. Is there any public comment that I'm not seeing? Anything else for the good of the order? You want to talk about, what's happening at the January meeting? Yeah.
Oh, here, let me just pull this up. All right. Oh, and of course it's.
It looks nice.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like that. Okay, hang on. I need to put this on the other screen. There. Now. Everybody should be able to see it. So January is looking like administration, including ownership recommendations from JRMA, and I think George will be mad at that, as well as enforcement from JRMA and environmental public health staff.
Oh, Jer, you're going to be busy, Doug.
Yes, so, well, we've done a lot of work on the ownership options, and we're working on that. That's been ongoing.
Okay. Well, everybody have great holidays, Christmas, all that stuff. We'll see you next year.
I don't think my hand is very visible raised over the. Whatever that is up there, the moon in the corner or something. I don't know. Anyway, sorry about that. I just wanted to add a couple things really quickly. I see Brian also has his hand up. The CPO work that we've talked about in the past, that's the compost procurement ordinance. We got a change from Attorney General in the interpretation of the law, which now is saying that their joint ordinances are not allowed under the law. So cities have to do their own separate ordinances. We're strongly encouraging the cities and the county to collaborate so that their ordinances match up and so that there's good continuity, not only within the county, but somewhat across the state. So just wanted to bring that news to light. We were quite disappointed to hear that, but we have updated our information. Also, on that note, the MRSC is an organization that is able to help and provide some guidance to you for information on the organics law, and I can send Amber and forward, she can forward that information to you. It's the Municipal Research Service Center, and they provide free assistance to cities, towns, counties, state government agencies. So I'll make sure I send that resource to you. There are some funding opportunities through the infrastructure funding through the EPA, the federal EPA, and also some recycling and education and outreach grant money. So those things are happening now. So again, I will include that in a follow-up email for Amber to send off to you. So I just wanted to update you a little bit on a few of those things, and happy to answer any questions anybody has if they do, or find the answers out if I don't know. Yeah, and thank you for allowing my participation here today.
Thanks for attending. It's good to hear your perspective.
Laura, this is Brian. I do have a question or request. So that's actually very timely feedback on the organics ordinance. I can't tell you how timely. I was just about to send an email to our policy analyst at the county. So would it be possible for you to share some information over email regarding that? Mm-hmm. We're working to schedule an RSWIC meeting, and that's going to change that conversation piece. So I'll take that. My update for the group, though, I wanted to let everybody know, we have an MOA that's in the works. It should be going to our county manager for signing, and that's an MOA on the garbage CRC contract negotiations. I know the group is interested to see what's in that. As soon as it's signed, I will be sharing that with the group. I was really hopeful to have it by tonight, but that didn't work out. So as soon as that's signed, hopefully early next week, that'll be an email coming from me to everybody so you can see the details within that and see what we've been working on.
Anything else from the good of the order? Ruben? Hasta lambego.
Thank you all.